Would you like to become the headline sponsor of the most authoritative Liverpool podcast on the planet? Would you like to be front and center on Walk On alongside James, Kiva, Simon, Andy and Tony? Would you like to reach hundreds of thousands of highly engaged Reds fans every month? Of course you would. Well, your brand can advertise with us now. Our skilled and charming commercial team are waiting to hear from you. Contact partnerships@theathletic.com. That's partnerships@theathletic.com.
The Athletic.
Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Well, whisper quietly, but is Liverpool's revival taking shape? Four unbeaten in the Premier League, and the Reds face the biggest test as Manchester United head to Anfield. We'll also get into the aggro at the Academy, and Wednesday's win over Wolves, and the company of Kiva O'Neill, Andy Jones and James Pearce. But let's kick off with those three words. Kiva, you always don't want to go to first because you never got it three words. So let's hear them. I bet you're prepared this week.
I'm always in trouble about this, aren't I? I was thinking, and it kind of makes sense and it kind of doesn't, but fourth clean sheet, obviously, I mean, in a row. So if someone can use their three words just to say in a row, we club together, then we got six words, fourth clean sheet in a row. In the Premier League, obviously, I think that is massive for Liverpool because we know how slippy they've been when they've conceded just any kind of goal, but especially those early ones.
Andy?
Mine would be calm and composed because I think Liverpool's win, it wasn't perfect by any means, but it felt like Liverpool were going to win the game and it didn't feel like Wolves were going to win the game. So that was quite nice.
James?
I'll go with much more polished.
I've got to say, I'm not quite convinced, but will be if they beat United. And that's what we all want to see, isn't it? But let's find out what they're saying on the Walk On podcast Facebook group. Tom Hales, consistency is the key. Tim and Cobelt, hunt them down. Dave, maybe, rely on youth. And Tom Dunno, bring on United. Well, you know, I'll endorse that. I love it when we play Man United. You know, Everton are the big rivalry in the city, as we all know. But United, when you scouse, you're brought up to, like, you know, to Manchester are the enemy, aren't they? You know, it's the way it is. And United were the most exciting game in many ways for me when I was young. First time I saw Liverpool United was 1970, would you believe? George Best was playing. And my first time at Old Trafford in 1972. So, yeah, I love these games. And James, we're looking forward to it. But how do we feel going into it? Because that was a routine win.
Full steam ahead, looking for Salah!
You know, you can't say that's happened too often this season.
No, and that was why it was such an absolute breath of fresh air, really, the sight of Liverpool cruising to what was ultimately a comfortable win. Yeah, they had to be patient. They had to grind Wolves down. And, of course, there's still plenty of room for improvement. But I think Klopp summed it up perfectly afterwards when he said,
I thought Anfield proved the point tonight again. It was super, super enjoyable. It felt like a proper unit. We all together loved that. And yeah, that's what we need again on Sunday.
The shape and the control that Liverpool had on the game was really impressive. Defensively, you know, we talked so much about Alisson being exposed so often, but, you know, I think Wolves had one shot on target and that was inside the first 3 minutes. After that, didn't really get a sniff. Six changes to the team that had started that lifeless stalemate at Selhurst Park. And, you know, we saw the difference that Konate makes. Great to see him back alongside Van Dijk, who I thought was at his commanding best in both boxes. You know, bold from Klopp to pick two teenagers to start in midfield. Yet, you know, that was vindicated, and Bacetic and Elliot massively benefited from certainly Fabinho's best display of the season so far for me, which, again, it's a pretty low bar with the issues he's had. But the protection was so much more impressive from Fabinho, who, you know, it was just great to see him snapping into tackles, reading the game better, intercepting, putting Liverpool on the front foot. And then, you know, attacking wise, I thought, you know, Jota, yes, he's still waiting for that elusive goal. But, you know, he set the tone with the way that he hassled and harried defenders. And yeah, eventually Liverpool got their reward. So, yeah, I think we knew this was going to be a pivotal week in the context of trying to force their way into that top four battle. And it was, I think you couldn't have really asked for much more.
But Kiva, you know, you were talking about on Monday, you were talking about Darwin, and he came in, came back, and he was excellent, wasn't he? I mean, the attack were very good.
I think having Nunes back, I mean, he just brings that energy, doesn't he? Which is becoming so pivotal to Liverpool at the minute, because we know how important pressing from the front is, and I think Jota does a great job of that as well. And he seems to be a little bit more up to speed now. I guess he's got more minutes in his legs, which I think will be important for him. I'm sure his goals will start coming, but obviously getting assists against Wolves, his old club. I think Nunes, pretty important for that as well. You know, Luis Diaz, not far away. Liverpool are getting back those players who've got the energy and got that quality to break through teams who are difficult to break down, I guess. And Liverpool did that against Wolves, who've been a weird nemesis, haven't they, this season? Played them 100 times and, yeah, been tricky at times as well. But an important win in midweek, given the, if Liverpool don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but Liverpool, you know, somehow managed to beat Man United, which, you know, isn't so far-fetched an idea, is it, on Sunday? They could go 7 points within United, which is, you know, how different and positive will we all feel then if that happens? Obviously, that's a big if, but things are boding well for Liverpool. And I think, you know, a lot of that does start with Nunes as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things for me is during this pause spell, you know, you look at the team and you see Alisson there, you've Van Dijk, you've got Trent, you've got Salah up front, you've got obviously Nunes, who mightn't be a world-class player, but a very good player. We've got enough talent there. We've got enough talent to be challenging Manchester United. We've got enough talent to be in the top four. And, you know, even in the midfield, which we've moaned about, you know, for so long this year, there's players there. I mean, what did you make, Andy, that midfield three last night? Bold, as James said, by Klopp. But, you know, I think boldness is where we're at these days.
Yeah, I think it was. I was a little bit surprised that he'd gone in what felt like a massive game. He'd gone for both of the young lads, but then equally, I think after the Palace midfield display, I don't think any of them necessarily put the cases forward for keeping the places. But I think equally, Klopp, whether he, you know, had an eye on this one but Fabinho and Bessetic were definitely given a rest against Palace just to manage them. So I think they were always going to come back in, and it was always going to be about what he wanted to do with that other slot, and he, you know, he went for a more of an attacking option, which I think was good, and it showed the intent of what Liverpool wanted to do, and it was about being on the front foot. And I think they were a proper unit, weren't they? And as James said, I think it was massively helped by Fabinho's, you know, leaping performance levels. Whether he got a bit more confidence, I think it was around a 10th minute when he wins the ball back in Wolves' box, and then he doesn't get the pass right to Nunes, and he's gutted about it, but just that was a big sign that, right, he's on it here. It's not something we've seen from Fabinho very much, if at all, this season, really. That front-footedness to be able to go and really dominate in, you know, in the opposition territory of winning the ball back. And I think that massively helped his performance. And then Bessetic just continues to wow, really, doesn't he? You know, every time you watch him. I mean, that turn on, it's around 5 minutes when Alisson pings it at him just outside his own box. Do you think, oh, God, what's going to happen here? And he just turns out of trouble away from two Wolves players. It was just like, you know, it was just wow. And another one of them wow moments, if you like. And then Elliot was, you know, really, really good in his work as well. You know, he was part of Liverpool's best attacking chances in that first half, and probably a bit annoyed with himself that he didn't get a goal. But I think the most important thing was that unit, and he didn't get dominated, and they were the ones who controlled it. And while I think Liverpool in general took a long time to settle, they were still, you know, it was clear, you know, they were the better side, I think, and eventually that told.
Like you say, it didn't feel for me like turning a corner, but, you know, it looked much more dynamic than of late, certainly than a Palace. And, you know, James, where do you think it leaves them in this chase for the top four? I mean, they're 6 points off Spurs with a game in hand. And let's face it, Spurs are like going through a similar sort of situation to us. They're higher in the table, but you never know what you're going to get from them.
No, and they've still got to come to Anfield, of course, which could be absolutely pivotal. I think, when you look at it, what, Liverpool into the top six, I don't see anyone below Liverpool, I think, you know, as a massive threat. I know Brighton, I think, have got a couple of games in hand, but you know, I'm not convinced they're going to be able to put together the kind of run needed to get into the top four. Same goes for Fulham, and then, you know, just above Liverpool, you know, Newcastle. You know, I'd be surprised with the limitations of their squad. You know, I think they've shown, you know, over the last month or so, a bit of a dip that I would expect to probably continue through. So it does look increasingly likely that it'll be a shootout between Liverpool and Tottenham for fourth. And of course, you know, Tottenham, you know, coming off the back of, you know, a pretty wretched FA Cup defeat to Sheffield United last night. So, you know, Liverpool should fancy it. And I think, as you said, Tony, it's not, the quality's there to get the job done. The problem has been so many players underachieving for so long of the season, coupled with all the injury issues that have dogged them along the way. So they've given themselves a real chance, haven't they? You think from that debacle at Molineux, what was that, a month ago, when, you know, to go win the Merseyside derby, and now. Yeah, of course, you can't just overlook what happened against Real Madrid, but it's 10 points out of 12 in the Premier League. It's 4 clean sheets in a row. You know, there have been signs of recovery, but I think the real litmus test for how far that goes will obviously come at Anfield on Sunday against a much, much better team than Liverpool have beaten of late. And just picking up on what Andy said about the midfield-wise, I thought, you know, again, one of the most impressive things for me about Bacetic was how he handled, quite unfairly in my book, getting a yellow early on, because Mateus Nunes, you know, absolutely conned Paul Tierney with the way, it was one of those ones where it was a nothing foul really, but the rolling around and the theatrics convinced Tierney to get the yellow card out. And for someone who plays Bacetic's role, that, you know, that part of his game is being in opponents' faces and winning the ball back and trying to turn defence into attack. So it's a hell of an ask, but he's done that. I can think of probably 2, 3, even 4 times now where he's handled himself so well when it could be a bit of a predicament when you're on a yellow that early in the game. And yeah, I thought that there was just so many positives to come out of it. And probably the biggest one of the lot was the fact they didn't allow the disallowed VAR goal to affect them. Because I think in a season when you've had so many setbacks, that would have been easy to just think, oh, here we go again, you know, the world's against us. And I think when I watched it back, I can kind of, it's one of those ones where I think when you slow it down, it always looks a lot worse. And, you know, I didn't see a foul initially, but when you watch it back, Jota does catch Kilman, and then, you know, obviously then the ball drops into the path of Nunes. But, you know, it was the kind of one where I'm not convinced. You know, it's one of those ones that could go either way. It's not always going to get ruled out. But yeah, the fact that Liverpool channeled that frustration, channeled that sense of injustice, and actually got better rather than kind of wilted, I think that was probably the biggest sign for me in terms of the mindset changing.
Well, yeah, and I think we can take quite a bit of positivity from it. But you know what? Sunday is crucial. You listen to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
As they emerge victorious on penalties, and a scuffle breaking out after the game as well. The Porto goalkeeper on the floor.
Tony Evans here with James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones would Walk On from The Athletic. Well, I'll tell you what, there was a fight in Kirby on Wednesday night. Never heard that before. Kiefer, you were there. What was it like? Tell us what happened. Was it man bites?
I reckon I was at the best game on Wednesday night on Merseyside. I don't know if there was ever any others going on. But yeah, it was pretty... I mean, the game itself. So Liverpool under-19s played Porto in the last 16 of the UEFA Youth League, which is essentially the mini Champions League, isn't it? And Porto started the game really well, got a contentiously awarded penalty. Didn't look like a penalty from where I was. And, you know, it was on BT Sport, actually. So lots of people tweeting, never a pen. And, you know, it was quite funny being at the academy and the game is on, like, you know, a main channel. Loads of people are getting phone calls and, like, it was never a pen, that. And, like, you know, people like, hey, it's never a pen, that, sort of just spreading different things around. I was like, this is, you know, how the, the role switch of Liverpool's first team not being on the telly and the under-19s were.
It's the madness of modern-day football, isn't it? You know, you can't watch a Premier League game, but you can watch the under-19s. It's just, you know, it's...
I mean, it makes sense. It's just bizarre, really, isn't it? But, you know, great opportunity for the young lads at Liverpool. And he did take it, to be fair. You know, going 1-0 down, I think they struggled a little bit in that first half, got going towards the end of it. Then they get the goal in the second half through Mel Camu, Frauendorf, who I thought was brilliant in that second half. Ben Doak as well, just, you know, absolutely magnificent again. Every time you watch him, he's so direct, fearless, quick, just can hit the ball with either foot, just wants to run at players, you know, will take it past them, run back, take it past them again. Just, you know, I think there was a hat-trick of turns that just were like, wow. But yeah, that wasn't even the drama, really. So obviously the game goes to a penalty shootout and, you know, sort of rumours of... Luis Diaz's little brother is on the bench for Porto, Jesus Diaz, which, you know, we're all frantically Googling, like, what's going on here? Like, no one knew. It turns out that it is his brother after some extensive and quick Googling. So he comes on with another player in the final couple of minutes of the game to obviously take a penalty in the shootout. Doesn't get a touch of the ball for the last couple of minutes. And then he takes the fifth penalty. So Ben Doak, who's had a tremendous game, hits the post with the first penalty. Porto score all of theirs. Liverpool score all of theirs after that. So it all comes down to Jesus Diaz to step up and knock Liverpool out of the Youth League, which essentially is potentially Liverpool's last real trophy hope of the season as a club. And Luis Diaz's little brother has this big opportunity and he blazes his penalty wide and he's absolutely devastated. And then, yeah, from there, Liverpool score a couple and the Porto player steps up and hits the crossbar. And then, you know, Liverpool players are all celebrating, they run forward. And it was just bizarre because it was just like, I don't even know how Porto players got there that quickly, but obviously because their player and the goalkeeper were up that end, Liverpool players all sort of surround them. Well, they're celebrating in the goal mouth and then a few of them sort of run past. And then it just sort of all kicks off, all coming together. Punches are being thrown, not entirely sure by who. The footage doesn't really show it very well. It was just like carnage, chaos to end the game. So it was probably all over after about 15 seconds. But for that 15 seconds, it was just wild. Like nobody sort of expected the game to end in that way. Obviously, the Liverpool now through to the last eight, the quarterfinals, they'll face Sporting Lisbon away. So, you know, Porto gave up the opportunity of going down the coast and, you know, playing their league rivals there. But yeah, just, I mean, pretty spectacular, pretty bizarre.
It sounds like a fantastic night. And the thing is, you can be all po-faced about it, like the commentators, you know, we don't like to see this sort of thing. But actually, have you ever seen a game that hasn't been improved by a minor scuffle, by a fight? I haven't. They're all great. I mean, Andy, it sounds like a brilliant night, doesn't it?
I know, yeah, it certainly topped the mind of watching Burnley go through against Fleetwood in the Cup, where it was attack v defence, but there was only one goal. And then you get through and then you find out that you've got Man City away in the next round. So, I think it would have been much more enjoyable if I'd been, watching that drama rather than an FA Cup victory that sort of feels completely pointless now given the draw.
Talking about conflict, James, we move on now to Sunday and we move on to Manchester United arriving at Anfield. Well, I mean, there's so much we can say about this game, but, you know, it's like, we, as you've said before, you know, three wins in the last five, unbeaten in the last four of the Premier League, not conceding. You know, does Real Madrid begin to look like a blip? United anywhere near as good as Real Madrid, despite the, you know, the plaudits they're getting? Where do we stand in respect to United, do you think?
You know, I think it's a difficult one at the moment. I mean, they're certainly infinitely better shape than when Liverpool went to Old Trafford right at the start of the season, when, you know, we were talking about both teams having got off to a pretty wretched start, and Ten Hag was feeling the heat a bit already, wasn't he, then? And you think you have to, whether it's grudgingly or not, admire what he's done there since in terms of how he's got them going. And I think getting Ronaldo out the door has certainly been a key part in terms of transforming things there. And the fact that they're still competing on all fronts show you that they are dangerous. I don't think they're in the same class as Real Madrid. I don't think they can hurt you in the same manner. But, you know, when you look at the kind of ruthless way that they dispatched Newcastle in the Carabao Cup final, you know, even making quite a few changes last night, coming back to beat West Ham in the way they did. And, you know, I don't think you can completely rule them out of the title race at the minute as well. So, yeah, this is... It's a really good gauge, I think, on Sunday afternoon of where Liverpool are at. And you know, the stakes are always high, aren't they, when these two clubs meet? But this one does feel especially important, because you kind of think of the polar opposites you could end up with come Sunday night. You know, you could be reflecting on, you know, Liverpool's probably their biggest, most important win, probably since they beat City in October. And what that could do for them in terms of the springboard with what they've got coming up. And, you know, they'll be right in the mix for the top four. Lose to a team that probably hurts more than anyone when you do lose to them. You're suddenly thinking, well, where does that leave this revival? Is it just in tatters? Is it going to be too much to get into that top four conversation? So I'm intrigued to see what kind of lineup Klopp goes with. I don't know what everyone else thinks, but I think the balance of the midfield, that's going to be really interesting, which three picks in that department.
I think it shows what spending 250 million in the summer can do to a team. And I know they already had Rafael Varane, but what Ten Hag's done is effectively rebuild Man United's spine. They're at their best. They've got De Gea, who's back in form compared to, you know, where some of his levels have been at in recent seasons. You've got Varane, he was already there, but Martinez, Casemiro, Fernandes, and then you've got Rashford, who's not necessarily always the number nine, but he's that figure who's just at the moment in an unbelievable vein of form. And it shows what you can do and how you can build. And that's what you would say Liverpool's spine has sort of certainly been lacking this season, mainly in the midfield department, have been able to control and sort of dominate games. But I think that's where the big difference is for United this season. They've got to a point where, I mean, even if you compare their lineup to, you know, from last season to this, it's night and day in terms of, you know, that quality, that experience, and also the type of characters they've got. So I think that's where you see the biggest change. And that's where I think, you know, Casemiro, Liverpool know a lot about what he's about, given, you know, they've faced him, you know, playing for Real Madrid on a number of occasions. And I think James is right. It is really interesting. It will be interesting to see what he does with that midfield, because you would assume, you would probably think Fabinho, Bacic and Henderson, you would imagine. I think that would probably be what Klopp would be thinking. I don't know whether Elliot may have swayed things, but I think equally you've got to be careful of that Manchester United transition, which has been so important for them. So you want to be guarding against that. And I think that's why he might air for sort of the more experienced, probably more responsible, and that's not to disrespect Elliot in any way, but, you know, a type of, you know, in Henderson. But I think that's why United have, yes, it shows what spending 250 million is. Hopefully Liverpool can spend that and have the same effect in this summer. But they've built a core and a spine which has become a lot more, well, much more improved than what they were working with. And I think that's massively helped them get to where they're getting to. And they're riding this crest of a confidence wave where no matter what they do, no matter what game situation, they're finding ways to win games. And I think that, you know, that is also helping them and just moves them on again and again and again.
There's that togetherness, isn't there? Which, you know, we've seen at Liverpool in recent seasons, not only on the pitch between these, you know, elite sort of athletes with that elite sort of winning mentality, like Casemiro. I think Fernandes has always had that. De Gea, obviously Varane. There's so many players in that team. Rashford, I can't stop scoring, can he? He's just in, you know, this rich vein of form. everything he hits turns to a goal. I think there's that togetherness on the pitch that you're seeing, but also, you know, watch the end of their game last night and there's a togetherness now among the fan base with the players. I think that all starts and ends with Erik ten Hag and how he's handled, you know, coming into Man United, because, you know, when they got beat by Brentford, I think we were all thinking, oh, you know, here they go again, another up and down season. But it just, you know, he's turned it around completely. And I think the way he's dealt with different situations, I think we've gone over them there, but I think that's been massive to them. They just needed a manager who would come in and do those things. It's all sort of aligning for them at the minute. So what better time for Liverpool to beat them?
Well, yeah. If you're Klopp, you think to yourself, well, things turned around so quickly there that things could turn around for us and this would be a perfect day for it. But you know what I'd say? And the thing I worry about, drop the high line on Sunday. Drop the high line. I'm worried about it. This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
Jota, here's Salah, and here is number four with the deftest of touches. Five at Old Trafford, four at Anfield, and still more than five.
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic, with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill, and Andy Jones. So Liverpool are unbeaten in seven meetings at Anfield against Manchester United. Wouldn't it be brilliant to have an eighth there? Well, not only unbeaten, you know, wouldn't it be brilliant to have a victory? Mohamed Salah scored 10 goals in the last five games against United, home and away. Salah, what? It's time for him, isn't it, to feast on United again, James?
I certainly hope so, yeah. I mean, again, it was great to see him leaving with a smile on his face on Wednesday night. It was quite funny, actually. I was in the mix zone afterwards waiting for the players to come through, and I think, as everyone knows, Salah very rarely does media, and I basically said to him, come on, Mo, you know, that 20 goals for the season, only the second Liverpool player ever to score 20 plus and reach that milestone in six successive seasons, I think, after Ian Rush. And he kind of like screwed his face and said, only 20 goals, that isn't a good season.
Love that. Love that for Mo.
It's and you just know that, you know, that's his mindset. He won't need telling that, you know, it's not like people are going to be, he would have been asking people to sign match balls or anything for him to mark that achievement. Because for him to only have 20 at the start of March isn't the level that he expects. And you can guarantee that he'll be looking at, you know, the games that are left and thinking, well, I can still, no, I'd expect to get 30.
And five against United, it sends them right on that trajectory.
Exactly, yeah.
But what was it towards the end of last season when he revealed like his goal target was like 40 or 50 goals or something?
Something crazy like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which I love for him, just like sitting at home being like 20. That's not.
Yeah. I think he got to 30, and then he said, "Come on, Mo, you got 30. Surely you can have a chat with us." And he was like, "I'll chat when I get to 40." And it was like, I don't know whether that was supreme confidence or whether he just knew it was a perfect way to fob us off.
He breaks records pretty much every game. So, like, you standing there trying to get him, being like, broke another record, Mo. And he's like, yeah, it sort of happens quite a lot. So,
yeah. And of course, you know, it could be another kind of bit of history for him on Sunday. He's now only one behind Robbie Fowler as Liverpool's, you know, in the race to be Liverpool's highest scorer of the Premier League era. So, yeah, it did, you know, it does make me laugh because I think, you know, by his ridiculously high standards, Salah would be the first to admit that he's been a fair way off that for the vast majority of this season. Yet, you know, how many other players would absolutely love to be in the kind of crisis where they've got 20 goals under their belt at the start of March? It's all about levels, isn't it? And I think the great thing for Klopp is, as well, when he looks at that front line now, you know, yes, you know, Nunes didn't get his goal against Wolves, but you know, that love affair he's got with the Kop just continues to grow in terms of they love how he imposes himself on games. It was great to see him back. No ill effects from that shoulder problem. I thought Diogo Jota did everything that Klopp asked of him after being played in that central attacking role in terms of hassling and harrying defenders. And I think he was key. Klopp touched upon it afterwards. You know, he described him as super important in terms of the shape of the team, because as Klopp always bangs on about, you know, defending starts from the front. And remember Pep Linders talking about Jota as being a pressing monster, and they've certainly missed that. Yeah, Jota hasn't scored now in 26 appearances, which is a ridiculous barren run for someone of his calibre going back to last April. But you know,
well, again,
sure
five against
change.
United, wouldn't it? Five from home, five for Jota. That works for me.
And but I mean, what does that, I mean? That would be interesting to see. What does he do? Because obviously, he gave Gakpo a breather, didn't he? Gakpo only came on for the last 15. Does he bring Gakpo back in? Does he, you know, does he keep faith with the three that started last night? You know, it's a really nice position to be in. I think defensively, Trent Alexander-Arnold, that was much more like it as well from him at both ends of the pitch. And of course, you know, as Kiva said, it'd be you know, you've got a resurgent Marcus Rashford coming to Anfield on the weekend, and they've had some good ding-dongs before, and that, you know, that if you're looking for key battles, then Trent against Marcus Rashford is definitely going to be right up there.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I'd refer to them as good ding-dongs. I'd be on the couch ding-dongs, some of them. And, you know, this is going to be a crucial thing. You know, I mentioned the high line before, but Trent against Rashford, obviously they're going to target him, and this is another big test.
Yeah, massive. And I sort of looked into Trent this week, just to, because everyone knows, and I think he'd also admit that he's not been where he wants to be consistently enough this season, but I think his performance yesterday was certainly a big step in the right direction. And I think his, you know, even his performances against Everton and Newcastle were signs that he was sort of beginning to get back to his best. And it was just sort of looking at different elements of his game, which, you know, to try and sort of, I guess, work out why he might not be up to, you know, those levels where he's been in the past, and, you know, the stuff like the minutes played. But I think one of the things that is important to highlight is the relationships and the connections around them. And I think that's what certainly Abu Konate last night brought, because I thought he was, for someone who'd just been out injured to come back in, I thought he was excellent and looked, you know, he didn't look rusty in sort of any way. A couple of straight passes, I think, in the first half, but that you sort of grew into the game as it went on. And I think in these types of battles, when you want Trent to be as effective as possible going forward, but you know that you've got a Marcus Rashford who's going to play, going to try and cheat, going to try and, you know, by staying high and sort of leaving Trent and looking to get into that pocket behind, it's, you know, there's a lot of responsibility comes on Trent to make sure he's aware of and knowing where Rashford is, but also on that right centre-back, but also that right central midfield as well. And I think what we saw against Wolves and Elliot, I thought, you know, did this well. And Fabinho's, you know, being able to help out in that regard as well was important in terms of shutting down anything Wolves tried down that flank. And they didn't try much, which I guess is a testament to how well Liverpool sort of shut that area down. And that's going to be key. It's Trent v Rashford, yes, but it's also how can those around Trent, you know, help contain a player who, unfortunately, at the moment, no one seems able to contain. So that is the big test. It's going to be a big test for him. But you would hope that not only can he come out of that battle victorious, but also, you know, be effective and be the person who's, you know, who's feeding those front three and being his creative best, because, you know, we all know that's where he wants to be, and that's all where we want him, you know, producing those elite, you know, those elite passes and that creativity, which will help Liverpool hopefully win the game.
Well, Kiva, I start with you with the three little words. How about finishing with you? Let's have a prediction. My predictions have got me, you know, they've been disastrous, haven't they? Me guaranteeing wins left, right and centre, never got them. So I'm not going to guarantee on Sunday. I want it from you. I want you to guarantee a win.
Thanks for that. I mean, great. I hate predicting scorelines, but it's so hard to predict this one, I think, because United are just, like, I'd say grinding out wins, but they're quite convincingly winning games. Liverpool may be more on the side of grinding out their past three wins in the Premier League. Obviously, weren't able to do it at Palace. That would worry you a little bit. But like Andy just mentioned there, Konate being back, I think, is just integral, isn't it? You know, whatever happens in the midfield will be important. Whether Klopp's tempted to stick with that midfield, I don't know. I'd kind of be tempted to do it, just like go for it, see what happens. I think Harvey Elliott being more of that attacking midfielder and Bissetic being, you know, the one to help out Fabinho and improve Fabinho's game a little bit as well. I think he's done that since he's when he's played alongside him. I think that can be important. Attack, he'd probably say the same. Salah knows there's another record to be equaled or broken. I think the game will be won by a counter-attack goal of some form, whether that's United or Liverpool, because I think it's just going to be that kind of end-to-end. I'd like to think that it would be Liverpool, and I just hope that, you know, I'm not sure what the mood was like at Anfield, but I think it was probably quite good last night, given Liverpool won. I think for United, it's going to be similar to Everton recently. And you'd think that Liverpool get an early goal or just look, you know, competent and comfortable coming out of this game. Even if it is a draw, I think avoiding defeat in this is quite key. But fingers crossed for the Liverpool win and maybe, you know, an Alisson assist, dare to say it.
And the roof comes off the famous old stadium once again. From goalkeeper to goal poaching master. In one fell swoop.
Oh, well, that worked for me. And you know what? Anfield should be at its best. The bastion of invincibility. And we're all looking forward to it. So that's all for now from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James, Kiva and Andy. And you too for listening in. Remember, you can get involved in our Walk On group on Facebook. Just search Walk On Podcast and join the group there. And we'll be back after the Manchester United game, no doubt to celebrate.
The Athletic.